We're holding on your Dalad Omud Beis, nine lines from the bottom, Bifnei Beis Din. We learned in the Mishnah, again, our Mishnah had kind of summarized in a few brief words the details of under what circumstances are there payment for Nezakin, and we said Bifnei Beis Din, that one of the things is it has to be in front of Beis Din. So what does that mean? That would exclude a case where after a person caused hezek, then he sold his property, and then he goes to Beis Din. So as we talked about yesterday, only when it comes to karka is Beis Din going to take it away. So here we're talking about, for example, that he sold well, Rashi actually says what it means is rather it means that so he sold everything and then he used up all the money before there was a chance to bring him to Beis Din. He already not only had sold everything, but he had already used up all the money as well. So now, therefore, Beis Din isn't, so they don't have anything to collect from him. They're not going to go and collect from the buyers. So the Gemara asks Shmamina, can you learn from that? What about a similar case if somebody were to borrow money and sell all his property, and then he comes to Beis Din? Are you going to say also ain Beis Din Gervin Lemehan, that Beis Din can't collect for him, can't collect from them? After all, Rashi points out the Malva can. In fact, we have the whole concept throughout Shas of the Chosim Shabodim and the Malva going and then going to Beis Din and being turdif and taking away the property. So how could you say that? Why should this be any different? Tosfos discusses over here that actually, you know, when you get down to it, there could be an obvious difference. There you're talking about a milva b'shtar. There you're talking about borrowed money and there's a shtar to prove it. Here you're talking about nezakin and there's not here there's nezakin and there's no shtar. So if the Gemara means on the point of view, which the Gemara discusses in some places, we've had it before, that a debt that it says in the Torah is considered as though it's written in the Shtar, then the Gemara should be mentioning that point. So Tosfos discusses maybe the Gemara means the question of Shibud Deraisa or not, is the whole concept of Shibud only Derabanan, and therefore maybe so by Loiva we say it because we don't want people to avoid lending money, whereas by Nezikin that wouldn't apply. Anyway, the question is, are we assuming then that the same thing would apply as far as a Loiva and Malva as by Nezakin? Ella, no, you can't say that. Prapla based in Hedyotis, rather you have to say the words Bifnei based in of our Mishnah means to exclude a based in of Hedyotis, meaning of people who don't know how to judge the din. Now we're going to talk now in principle. To be exact, actually, Rashi says only a bait when you have the distinction in halacha between Hedyotis and Mumchin. A mumcha in Gemara terminology, an expert, specifically means somebody who has smicha, the original smicha that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. We're going to talk about right before the next Mishnah on Tesvav Amud Beis, that nowadays, of course, we don't have that, but in the times of the Gemara, they didn't have it in Bavel, but they still had it in Eretz Yisrael. The rule is only a mumcha can judge dine knosis, the various cases that we talk about throughout Shas, where you're paying more or less than the value of the damage. For example, keren, you're paying chatzinet. For example, keren, when the animal's a tam, you're paying chatzinezik. Or for example, you have tashlumei kefal for ganav, tashlumei abav chamisha. The 30 that's paid if your shur kills an eved, et cetera, et cetera. All those are knosis, and only a based in mumchin can judge those. So we're going to see on Tesvav Amud Beis what we do nowadays when we don't have a based in of smuchin. But in any case, the point is that's what the Mishnah comes to exclude with the words bifnei based in, means if you don't have such a based in, then you can't judge such cases. The Mishnah had continued, Al pi Edim, that the case has to be decided based on Edim. So that means prat l'moide b'knas v'achakach bo Edim shehu potter. That comes to exclude a case where the person, now we have like this. If a person admits about, now all these cases of knosis, again, all these cases where the Torah is imposing a fine defined as where he's not paying exactly the amount of the nezek, then there's a rule, mojib knas potter. If a person comes voluntarily to Beis Din and admits that he's guilty of this and he owes such and such, then he's potter for it. It's only when there's Adim. Now there's machloikas in later on in Armasechta and in other places in Chas. What happens if he does that and later on Adim show up? And so if Adim never show up, then yeah, he's potter. He can't, doesn't pay a knas off the atzmai. But now when eventually Adim show up and say that yes, this happened, he stole, or his sure tam caused damage or whatever, is he still potter or not? So the Gemara is saying that when the Mishnah says al pi edim, it comes to exclude the case of moedim knasva achakach bo edim, when he admitted and later on the edim came, shehu potter, he remains potter. So in other words, when the Mishnah is saying al pi edim, means it has to be that the edim that to begin with, where do we know that he's chayev? This is because of the edim, not because of what he said. Meaning Tosfa says, if no Adim ever show up, you don't even need the Mishnah to tell us that later on in the second parak, the Gemara is going to mention, or later on actually in the seventh parak, the Gemara is going to mention that point. But so here we have to be talking about that we have a Chiddush in our Mishnah, therefore it must be when the Adim did show up later. Well, the question is, well, fine, that works out according to the opinion over there that's how it is, that he'd be potter. So our Mishnah is coming in and implying that with the words al pi edim. But according to the opinion that he would be chayev in that case, my ikomemer, then what are you going to say? What are the words al pi edim in our Mishnah coming to be machadish? And because after all, again, to say that he's potter, if no Adim ever show up, we don't need our Mishnah. We have a Mishnah later on in the seventh parak. And Tosfos points out, it's not one of these examples that we learned before of Toni v'hodim mafarish, where you could say our Mishnah says it briefly, and later on it says it in more detail later, because it really doesn't say it in any more detail later. In Perek Merubah, it uses the same brief expression that it does over here. So it doesn't need to tell us that. And if you're talking about where the Adim do eventually come, well, okay, so you have two opinions about that. How would the opinion that say that nevertheless we are then mechayev him, because after all, Adim did show up, how are they going to understand what our Mishnah is teaching us? And the answer is sefer itzrichlei. According to that opinion, you're right. The words al pi Adim is not really such a chiddush. The chiddush is the continuation of the Mishnah, b'nei chorin or b'nei bris, where it says that the Adim have to be b'nei chorin, free Jews, or b'nei bris, and they have to be Jews. They have to be part of the bris. So b'nei chorin l'mo'ote avodim. The word b'nei chorin comes to exclude avodim, or b'nei bris l'mo'ote over the chavim, and the word b'nei bris comes to exclude goyim. And utzricha, and in fact, we need to be told by both of them. You can't say that could have said one, and we would learn the other one, because the iashmin and eved. If we were only told that an eved cannot be an aid for this, you would say mishum de ein lo yachas. You know why? Because an eved is within condition, has no yichus. His children are not considered his. La halacha, biologically, they're his children, but la halacha, they're not considered his children, because we learn Avraham says to his servants, you're a nation that's like a donkey. So just like donkeys, we don't care about who the father is. The same way over here, we don't.
That's Nebuchadnezzar.
In general, in the Gemara, whenever we use the word Eved without specifying, unless we're in a context of Eved Ivri, it means an Eved Kanani. Because after all, an Eved Ivri has fundamentally the same dinim as a regular Yid, with the exception that he can marry a Shifch Kananis. So when we talk about an Eved, and we talk about the different halachas that he has relative to a Jew, 99% of the time we're talking about an Eved Kanani. So I will not read the Yeshla Yachas, but on the other hand, a Goy does have Yichus. We learned in Kiddushin about this, because since the Pasuk mentions that the Pasuk describes one of the kings of Aram, and it names his father and his grandfather. So that teaches us that the Pasuk mentions him and his father and his grandfather. So we learn from that Goyim have Yichus in the sense that they were considered their father's child, Bahalocha, which is relevant, for example, as far as the dinim of Yerusha. It's relevant, for example. So with an Eved, let's say, if a Well, an Eved doesn't have property of his own anyway, but so whatever. The fact that he doesn't have Yichus is relevant as far as other things. We learned, for example, in Kedushin that therefore if a Mamzer were to marry a Shifcha, well, Shifcha is different, actually. Yeah, we said a Mamzeres can't marry an Eved. It wouldn't work to be Matahar her children. Whatever, you have different points that come out of the fact that an Eved has no Yichus, that the children are not considered his. But on the other hand, with a Goy, for example, a Goy Yaushin's his father, Minatora, because he's considered... He's considered legitimately his father, Apitoda. Anyway, so... So what we mean is, in other words, that when you say that a certain Goy is the son of his father, that has validity in Halacha. Obviously, right, not every Goy is Miyuchas, but in other words, the concept of Yuchas exists among Goyim in a way that it doesn't among Avodim. So therefore, so if it said Avodim or an apostle as Edim, you wouldn't learn from that Goyim. So Avol Nochri Deshel Yachas Emaloi. The Iashmin and Nochri, on the other hand, if we were told that a Goy is possible Eidus, you would say Mishum Shaykh Mitzvahs. Because a Goy doesn't have mitzvahs except for the Shem Mitzvahs for Noach. He doesn't have any of our Jewish mitzvahs. I will Eved the Shaykh the mitzvahs, but an Eved is Shaykh to mitzvahs. After all, he's Chayiv in all the mitzvahs that women are Chayiv in. Eveloi, maybe not, maybe he should not be possible Eidus. Tzricha, and therefore the Mishnah needed to mention both. Now, the more basic question is, why does the Mishnah have to mention that anyway? We know that Goyim and Avodim Apostle Eidos, we almost never have that. We have the rare case, for example, where a woman's husband disappeared, and we can have an Eved or a Shifcha or a Goy Masiach Lepitomoi can say that he's dead. But other than that, in general, we know the Apostle for Avodim anyway. Why does our Mishnah even need to mention it? So there's a couple of explanations. The Rambam makes a point. He says, listen, we're talking about over here damage involving animals. Where is that likely to happen? In places and in barns and things like that where the animals are kept. Who's likely to be there? You're not necessarily going to have B'nai Chorin and Jews over there. Who's likely to be around there? Avodim or Goyim who are working for you. So you would think maybe in that case that we should accept Eidos from them because they're likely to be the only ones around. And therefore, the mission has to tell us that no, nevertheless, you need Jews who are B'nai Chorin. The Rosh makes a different point. He says that it also has to do with the case. Suppose, for example, that a goy's animal damages a yid's animal. So we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that he is chayiv for it. But nevertheless, we're not going to say, listen, in goyish law, they make no difference between Jewish edim and goyish ones. For that matter, they'll also accept one aid. They'll also accept hearsay and so forth. So you would think maybe if he's coming in front of a beis din of ours, in front of a Jewish beis din, they could tell him the same thing. Look, in your laws, we would accept hearsay evidence, or we'd accept from goyim or whatever. Therefore, we're going to accept that against you. No, the Mishnah is saying, nevertheless, you still need Jews, b'nei chodin, to have seen the thing in order to give Eidos to require the goy to pay in our batidin. Then the Mishnah had said, "V'hanoshim b'chol hanezek." Women are included in the concept of nezek. So, meaning, in other words, whether a woman is a nizik or a mazik, either way, the payment is going to be done the same way. So the Gemara says, "Menahani mili." Where do we know that from? So Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, "V'chein tonet ve'ra bishmol." Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, and we also learn similarly in a brisa of Rabbi Shmuel. We have this in Kiddushin as well. Omakro ish oy isha ki yasu ish oy isha ki yasu mikochatos. Hagoy Sabach adds the word ha'odam, which is also in the pasuk. When a man or a woman do any of the averus that a person might do, then the pasuk says that they're chayiv to bring a korban. Therefore, Hishra Kosiv, Ishal Ish, Lachol Unshin Shabbat Torah. By that, we're saying that the Torah is equating women to men as far as all the punishments in the Torah, including Korbonus, including Malkus, etc. Tosfos actually points out there are places where the Torah will say about a certain mitzvah, Ish, and there will say in general that it applies only to men unless we have a particular limud. To the contrary, but in general, we're saying that where the parasha is just written Beloshen Zohar, for example, after this pasuk Isha Isha Kiyasim Kochatas Adam, after that the Torah continues the Torah continues to describe the case using Loshen Zohar. That's nothing, Tosfos says, because we have the Torah Kula B'Lashon Zachar Nemra. In general, the default when the Torah is describing things is to use the masculine gender. So therefore, so now when it says Isha Isha, then it means that the whole thing does apply to women as well. It is true that in other places where it says the word Ish, we would need a special limud over there in each of those cases to say that it applies to women as well. Okay, so that's one limud. Dvei Rabbi Lazar Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Lazar, they taught a different way of learning that women are chayiv in the zikin. The pasuk says, "Ve'elam mishpatim ashatosim lufnehem." These are the mishpatim that you should place in front of them, and them means all the Jewish people collectively. Hishvah kosev ishal ishlochol dinim shema Torah, meaning the Torah is equating them as far as all the dinim of dinim mominus in the Torah, which it continues to talk about in Parshas Mishpatim. One interesting thing is the Ma'arid Beirav explains in Kedushin, where this Gemara also is, he says that the Vav of Ve'ela means this is a continuation of before. And what does Parshas Mishpatim come after? Parshas Yisrael, where you had Hashem tells Moshe to speak to the women and then the men. So now the Ve'ela Mishpatim is meant to continue as a continuation of that, and therefore we see that it's meant to apply to women as far as men, as well as men. Now, to be sure, Tosfos points out it is true that women are possible to serve as dayanim and as far as edim. But nevertheless, the concept of dinim, of dinim mominus, does apply to them equally well as to men. Tosfos brings over here and in other places, what about we know that Devorah was judging the Jewish people. So Tosfos says over here that maybe they were accepting her because of the shechina that rested on her, meaning they voluntarily accepted her as a judge because she was a Nevi'ah. She was one of the seven Nevi'ahs. That doesn't prove that normally that would work. There are other places where Tosfos gives other answers, one of them being that maybe she wasn't actually judging the people. She was just advising the Dayanim of what to do. And then the Dayanim themselves, male Dayanim, are actually giving out the verdict. There is a considerable discussion based on this Tosfos and the other Tosfos in about the whole question of women paskining halacha and other such things. There's a good deal of discussion pro and con about it. Anyway, but we see that the concept of dinim, it does apply to women as well as to men. Dvei Chizkiya v'Rabbi Yosi Aglili Tana, in the yeshiva of Chizkiya, as well as Rabbi Yosi Aglili, taught a third way of learning that dinim apply equally to men and women. Omakra, because the pasuk says regarding a shur that kills a person, behemus ish o isha, the pasuk says the shur kills a man or a woman, then continues to describe the dinim that apply. Therefore, hishra kosev ish al ish b'chom misas shema Torah. So we see the Torah is comparing them as far as any dinim of misa that are in the Torah. Tosfos actually wonders, you know, you have a couple of psukim earlier where it says ki yigach shur es ish o yes isha of a mace. So why is the Gemara bringing the later pasuk and not the earlier one? Tosfos basically just leaves the question open. They point out that on the face of it, the pasuk behemus isha isha, which the Gemara is bringing over here, the Gemara uses it later on in Or Masechta to learn that as far as that the yoshim yaushim the payment, if the after all the person is dead, who's supposed to get the payment is his yoshim, and we learn that it all apply equally well whether it's a man or a woman who died and then bequeathed it to their children. So Tosfos wonders why the Gemara is bringing this pasuk when we're saying that we're actually learning something else from it elsewhere. Pnei Yeshua gives an answer. He says, the Gemara said, what are we saying over here? That b'chol misas shabbat Torah. We don't mean, in other words, now obviously the pasuk, behemis isha isha, is not talking about misas based in. We're talking about a shur killed a person. Here we're trying to say that the Torah is equating them as far as misas based in, meaning, in other words, that if based in needs to execute a person, it applies equally well to a man, or it applies equally well to a man or to a woman. So the Pnei Yeshua points out, after all, the pasuk over here that the Gemara is bringing is not talking about that. So therefore, he says, because so he talks about, because you have a posik for a tam and a posik for a muad. So since by the tam, it already says isha isha by muad already. We already know that. So why would I have to repeat it by muad? Therefore, Rabbi Akiva is saying, in effect, it's kind of like one of those things in lozet, since you don't need it to be told that they're going to be chayav for whether a man or a woman is killed by a shor muad, because you know it already by a tam, then therefore we can use it to say that we learn at l'chol misa shabbat Torah that men and women equally are executed if they did something that's chayav misa. Okay, so we have three different limudim. The Gemara says it's srichi. Now we need all three of them. De'iyashmin and kamaisa, if we only had the first one from the case where the person does an aveira and is chayav a korban, you would say, you know what? You know why women are chayiv in the korban? Because Hashem has rachmonos on her, so that she should have a kapara. Otherwise, she's going to be stuck without a means of kapara. So therefore, Hashem gives her a break and says, go ahead and bring a korban. Avol dinin, but when it comes to dinin momenis, you might argue ish de bar maso matan ein, maybe only men who regularly do business should be chayiv and Tosfos, by the way, points out. I mean, so let's say, for example, you have you could argue, okay, so if the woman doesn't bring a korban, it means she gets off scot-free. But no, in other words, for example, you have, let's say, a person brings a chatos if they committed something of arayas. So in that case, if it was b'mezid, she's going to be chayiv koris. The fact that Hashem allows that a person can bring a chatos for it gives them a break, that otherwise they would have been chayiv koris. So therefore, so you could say Hashem is giving her a break and allowing her to bring a chatos rather than be chayiv koris. Avol dinin, but when it comes to dinin mominus, you could argue ish debar maso matan ein, only men who regularly do business, then yes, they should be involved in dinin mominus. Ish alo, you would think maybe women not. Therefore, we also need the limud from ve'elam mishpatim to say that no, the equation of men and women applies as far as dinin mominus as well. The Yashmin and Dinin, on the contrary, though, if it only told us by Dinin, you would say, you know why? Men and women are the same as far as that. In order that she should have what to live off of. In other words, it's true that women don't usually buy and sell. Nevertheless, you still need to have that that people want to, people are occasionally going to be doing business with her, if nothing else, to sell her food that she's, if nothing else, to sell her food that she's going to eat. Not even if her husband dies. Let's say her husband is alive. The fact is that she still needs to buy food in the store. If she's not chayev and nizakin, then people are going to want to stay away from her because they're going to say, you know what, she may cause damage and we have no recourse. So therefore, you could say that Hashem makes it that people that she should be chayev and nizakin so that people will want to do so people will want to do business with her. Rashi actually in Kedushin says it a little bit differently. Look, if she wasn't chayev and nizakin, she would be stealing from everybody. Everybody would be stealing from her, and then pretty soon nobody would want to have anything to do with her. So therefore, you could say for that reason, therefore Hashem makes it that she should be chayev and nizakin. Avo kapara, but when it comes to kapara, you could argue ish de bar mitzvah. Maybe only a man who's chayev and all mitzvahs ein should have a kapara. Isha de la bas mitzvah loy. Maybe a woman who doesn't have so many mitzvahs, not bas mitzvah, doesn't mean obviously she's not chayev in any mitzvahs. Just means she's not chayev in the full complement of mitzvahs that men are. So maybe you would think that she doesn't get kapara. Therefore, the Torah needs to tell us in both cases. The Iyashmin and Hani Tauti, then if we were told in these two cases of Kapara and Dinimominus, then you would say, because each one, Hocha Mishum Kapara, Hocha Mishum Chayosa, because each one, there's a reason why to be Machai of women in order that they should get Kapara and in order that they should be able to have what to live off of. Aval Inin Ketola, but when it comes to the case where a woman is killed by a shur, you could argue ish debar mitzvah ein ish debar mitzvah l'shalom koifer. Maybe only now we know that by a shur muad, the owner of the shur is paying koifer. The pasuk tells us that he has to pay a koifer. Literally means a ransom or an atonement for the fact that his shur killed a person. So we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara. We're going to talk about does the owner of a tam pay any part of that koifer as well? But for sure, when the animal is a muad, then he pays full koifer. So now you would think maybe only for a man, since he's chayiv in all mitzvahs, maybe therefore he should be paying koifer. Isha loy, but a woman not, because she's not chayiv in so many mitzvahs. the Iyashmin and Kofer. And on the other hand, if the Torah had only told us by Kofer, you would say, Mishumda Ika Ibud Neshama. You would say, you know what? The fact is a life has been lost, so therefore you need Kofer, whether it's a man or a woman. Aval Hani Tauti, but by the other two, by Dine Mominus and by Karbonus for Kapara, Deleka Ibud Neshama, nobody's life has been lost. Emaloi, maybe not, maybe women should be different than men. Tzricha, and therefore we need all of it. So ultimately we need all three of these Lamudim to learn that women are equal with men in every one of these ways, as far as Karbonus, as far as Dine Mominus, and as far as things involving Misa, in this case, meaning, in other words, that the owner of the Shur has to pay Kofer for the Misa. Okay. The last thing we said in the Mishnah was Hanizik v'hamazik v'tashlumin, the Nizik and the Mazik joined together in the payment. So the Gemara is going to bring a discussion that we're going to use this line from the Mishnah as to try to bring a proof one way or the other for it. So Itmar, we have a discussion like this. Palga Nizga, when we say the concept of Chatzi Nezek, we've been saying all this time that when a person has a Shur Tam, so it hasn't yet gored or bitten or whatever three times, then you're paying only half the damage. And then once the animal becomes moored, then you pay Nezek Shalim. What is the nature of that Chatzi Nezek? The fact that the Torah is telling you to pay half rather than the full thing. Rav Papa Amamamona, Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yishua Maknasa. Rav Papa says that is a chiyuv mamon. So meaning, in other words, now we talked about before, for example, a knas can only be done in a based in smuchim. Mamon can be done by any based in. Another example is we said moedu b'knas, then he'd be potter. If he voluntarily goes and admits in based in and there were no edim, he'd be potter from a knas, but mamon he'd be chayev. So it becomes important to know, therefore, if this chatzi nezek is mamon or knas. If he were to go to based in and admit voluntarily, would he be paying the chatzi nezek? When there are no edim, let's say, if it's a based in that's not smuchim, would they make him pay the chatzi nezek? Rav Papa is saying yes, because it's considered mamon. Rav Huna Breder Veshua Omer Knasa. He's a Rav Huna Breder Veshua says that's a knas. How do we figure? So like this, Rav Papa Omer Mamoina. Why does Rav Papa say that it's considered mamon? Kosovo, he figures Stam Shvarim Lav Becheskas Shimur Kaiman. Your average ox does not have a chazaka of being guarded. In other words, it's true that in other words, oxen have a natural tendency towards goring. It's true that it's not as common as Shane. It's true it's not as common as Shane Veregel. The fact is, we learned earlier in the Perek that Shane Veregel are very, very common. Shane Veregel are very common. It's very common for an animal to eat whatever it sees or to trample on whatever it sees. That's why we said there's no concept of Tam and Muad with those. With Karen, obviously, we're not saying that it's quite as common. But nevertheless, it's still common enough that Rav Papa is going to say, therefore, fundamentally, to begin with, the owner should have realized that his animal might do this. Therefore, really, by rights, he should have had to pay the whole thing. But Hashem has rachmanos on him, da'akati lo yayid Torah. Because after all, he hasn't yet been warned that his shirt is dangerous. So therefore, so the Torah gives him a break the first few times and says that he only has to pay half. But really, fundamentally, he should have had to pay the whole thing. So in other words, according to Rav Papa, what it is that when the Torah says Chatzi Nezek, the Torah is reducing the amount that he should have had to pay. By rights, he should have had to pay the whole thing. And instead, the Torah is giving him a break and reducing it down to half. But it's still considered mamon. On the other hand, Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yishua Amar Knasa, Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yishua takes the view that it's a knas, kosava stab shmarim b'cheskas shimur paimi. He holds that most oxen are guarded in the sense it's not very common for an ox to go and gore. So ubedinu deloy l'shalim klal. So by rights now, this ox gored one time or two times, he shouldn't have to pay at all, because after all, he didn't know that his ox is dangerous and he has to watch it. So we can say, says Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yishua, that the Torah penalizes him and makes him pay. Like this, he should have been, by rights, he should have paid nothing. Instead, the Torah is penalizing him 50%. That way it'll give him an incentive to watch his shur and make sure it doesn't damage in the future. What? In order that he should watch his shur. So, linter means to watch. So therefore, okay, so now the Gemara says, let's look at our Mishnah. Tnan, we said in the Mishnah, Hanizik v'hamazik v'tashlumin. We said the Nizak and the Mazik are both involved in the payment, in the sense, in other words, we're saying that both of them sort of bear the costs of the payment. So what does that mean? According to the Papa, we understand our Mishnah very easily. That's what we mean, that the Nizik is, so to speak, paying a part of the Tashlumin, because by rights he should get the whole thing, and instead we're talking about, again, as far as Keren, then we're talking about he's getting only half of it, so therefore you could say, in other words, that the cost of the damage is being split 50-50 between them, because fundamentally he should have had to pay for the whole damage, instead he's paying only half. So it comes out, so when the Mishnah says, Hanizik v'amazik v'tashlumin, according to the Papa, it's hinting at his point that this chatzi nezik is only mamon, and rather than knas, and therefore, in other words, that each of them, in effect, is paying half of it. Erol mando ama pauga nizka knasa, but Rav Huna Bered Yerushua, who says that's a knas, so what do you mean? How is the nizik involved in that payment? Hashta delavdi day shakil. Consider, he's getting something that fundamentally shouldn't even really be coming to him at all, because it's only a penalty that the Torah imposed on the mazik. But tashlumin isay, how does he get involved? How is he involved in the payment? The fact is, he's getting something. He's getting like a windfall, kind of, that by rights, by logic, he shouldn't have been getting at all. So what do you mean by nizik? So what do you mean the nizik is involved in the tashlumin? And the answer is, you're right. According to Rav Huna Bered Yerushua, the Mishnah is not talking about chatzi nezek. The Mishnah is rather talking about the case that we talked about before, where the nevela goes down in value from when the accident happened. So we talked about the other day, the nevela itself belonged, the dead body of the animal that was killed belongs to the nizek. What we said is, for example, let's say the damage was $100 and the nevela is worth $20. So we said that the mazik gives the nevela back to the nizik, that's 20, and then he pays another 80 on top of that. But we also discussed what happened if in between, from when the animal died and the nizik was informed of what happened, what happens if now in between the value of the nevela went down from 20 to 15, we said that we don't make the mazik now pay the other 85, instead he still just pays another 80. The five that the nevela has depreciated is on the nizik. We learned that the other day. So that would mean what the Mishnah says on nizik v'hamazik v'tashlumin. That the nizik sometimes bears some of the cost of the tashlumin, namely, if like this, if he had gotten the nevela right away and sold it as soon as possible, he would have gotten 20 for it, and now he's only getting 15 plus another 80 from the mazik. So that's what it means that he's bearing some of the cost. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? We already learned that in an earlier Mishnah. When we had the line in the Mishnah earlier, and we said Tashlumei Nizgoy, we learned earlier, meant that you have to fill in the Nezek, meaning that you start with the base value of the Nevela, and then you add on top of that whatever is needed to make up for the Nezek. And we said Malamachab by the Metaplan Nevela. We learned from that the owner is responsible to deal with the nevela and to sell it, and that way he has some of his money. So why would our Mishnah need to be repeating that point? So Mela, according to the Papa, our Mishnah is teaching us a new concept, that chatzi nezek is mamun rather than knas. But according to the Huna Bered Yerushua, that's not, that it is knas. Then our Mishnah is not teaching us that concept, because there you can't say the nizek is participating in the tashlumin at all. You have to say it's talking about pras nevela, but pras nevela we already had in an earlier Mishnah, and there's no reason for our Mishnah to repeat it. The answer is, the answer is, according to Rav Huna Bered Yerushua, you would say both Mishnayos are talking about the same thing, but one is talking about where the animal was a tam and the other where it was a muad. And in fact, you could say the Mishnah does have to tell us both. The tam, if we were only told about the case of a tam, you would say, Mishum da'akati lo iyaid. You know what? Since the owner has not been wounded yet and the animal has not become muad, so therefore, Maybe the Torah is giving the mazik a break and saying that he can give the nevela, and that any depreciation in the nevela is on the nizik. Avam muad emaloi, but by a muad maybe not. Maybe the mazik should be responsible for the pras nevela. Maybe in our scenario we should say that he's giving only 15 and he's going to have to pay another 85 on top of that. So maybe we should say that. The Iyashmin Muad, and on the other hand, if the Mishnah told us only by a Muad, you would say Mishum to come a Shalom Kula. You know what? At least with a Muad, he's paying the whole thing. So therefore, maybe the Torah gives him a break and says that he doesn't have to pay for the Pras Nevela as well. Abel Tam Emaloi, but a Tam, look, he's only paying half the damage in the first place. Maybe not. Maybe the Nizik shouldn't have to lose out the Pras Nevela. Tzricha, therefore, we can say the Mishnah, in fact, had to tell us by both of them because there's a Chiddush by each one of them that we couldn't have learned, that we couldn't have learned from the other one. So fine. So according to the Huna Breda of Yeshua, then you have a chiddush of what our Mishnah is saying. There is something that we can learn that we wouldn't have known otherwise. So fine. So we can't prove from our Mishnah one way or the other between this machlokas of our Papa and the Huna Breda of Yeshua. So let's go on. Toshma, the Gemara says, let's try to bring another proof. Later, the next Mishnah is going to say, Ma ben Tam, or actually the last Mishnah of our Perek, on Tazayin Amabez, we'll learn it Matzah Shabbos, Bez Hashem, says, Ma ben Tam Lamord, what is the difference between a Tam and a Mord? And one of the differences, the Mishnah says, Sha Tam Mashalim Chatzin Nezek Migufoy, a Tam pays only Chatzin Nezek, and the payment comes out of the body of the animal, meaning, as we've learned before, that the amount that he pays is capped at the value of the animal. If the chatzi nezek is greater than the value of the animal, he doesn't have to pay more than that. Or mord mashalim nezek shalom min ha'aliyah, as opposed to when the ox was a mord, then he's paying nezek shalom min ha'aliyah, from the best, meaning from meitav, from not only full, but he's paying from the best of his karka, from idis, like we learned earlier in the perek, or from the talpin, where we said all metalpin are considered idis because you can take them someplace else and sell them, whatever. Anyway, v'im issa. Now, if in fact you have the distinction that chatzi nezek is knas rather than mamon, like the way the Huna Breda Rav Yeshua says, listening nami ha, then the Mishnah should also mention that point. Tam ein mashalim apiatzmai umod mashalim apiatzmai. There is another difference according to that way of looking at it. A tam, if the owner of the tam comes to Beis Din and voluntarily admits that his shur damaged or killed, then he's going to be potter. Because it's modi b'knas, potter from the knas, right? So he wouldn't be paying chatzi nezek at all.
Oh,
yeah, but because that's the nature of a knas. Whereas according to the papa, he would be. So the Mishnah should mention that distinction. If the Mishnah is listing all the differences between tam and mord, it should mention that distinction as well.
So mord, even if you admit,
it's definitely mammon. There, it's no question; it's a payment to mammon, and therefore you're paying if you admit it. Yeah.
The fact that if you pay a chatzin nezek and he admits it, he gets away with that.
He might decide not to do that. He might decide, I might get away with it altogether because he doesn't realize that there are Edim. Then Edim show up and then he ends up paying it. But yeah, that's how it is. Modi b'knas potter. We're going to learn it. The Gemara is going to learn later on in the Masechta. And Perek Meruba, the seventh Perek of our Masechta, is going to talk a lot about Knossos, because we're going to have over there all the dinim of Ganav and Gazlan, and then the fact that a Ganav pays double, and if he shechted or stole the animal, he pays Abav Hamisha, and all of that is classic Knas. So we're going to deal a lot in that Perek with dinim of Knas, and there the Gemara is going to learn from Psukim this concept of Modi b'knas potter. Anyway, so the point is that, again, according to the Papa, we understand why the Mishnah is only mentioning the two things about Chatzi Nezek versus Nezek Shalim and Migufoy versus Min Haliyah, because according to him, that's all the distinctions there are. Both of them are payments of Mammon. Both of them, even if he comes voluntarily to Beis Din and admits it, he's still going to have to pay, because not a Knas. But according to Rav Huna Breda of Yeshua, one's Mammon, one's Knas, and the Mishnah should be highlighting that difference. And the answer is, the Gemara, you could say, you're right, Tana v'Shire, the Tana taught some things, but he left some things out. Well, of course, the question is always, my Shire to high Shire. In that case, what else did he leave out? You can't say that a Tana left out one thing. The answer is Shir Chatzi Koifer. You could answer, the Tana is leaving out the case of half Koifer. Namely, in other words, like this. Again, if a Shur Mord kills a person, then the owner is paying a koifer. He's paying a certain amount of the a certain amount to the yoshim of the victim. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta is the kofer, the value of the mazik or the value of the nizik, because it basically meant to compensate the nizik's family for the fact that he's dead, and therefore that now they don't have their breadwinner anymore, and therefore you have to pay for that, or is it that it's that the value of the mazik, that in effect he himself should have been chayiv nisa, and the Torah is giving him a break and saying instead that he can pay money, so therefore it would be his actual value if he were to be sold as a slave. It's machlokas later on in the Masechta. Anyway, the point is, by a mu'ad, you do that. By a tam, you don't do that. So therefore, you could say the Mishnah is leaving out that point. The fact is, you're paying kofar by a mu'ad. You're not paying half kofar by a tam. So therefore, you never, and nevertheless, the Mishnah is not mentioning that point. So you could say that you could say then that the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is Tana v'shaya. So once it left out that, so you can also say it left out the question of whether he pays if he's mo'da al piyatzma. But the Gemara says that's not a proof. If you're going to say that you, because of this matter of chatzi kofer, lav shidurahu, you can't really consider that the Tana left something out, because you could argue just the opposite. Halmani Rabbi Yosef Aglili, you could answer back that this that Mishnah is appointed of Yosef Aglili. Do amar tam mishalom chatzi kofer. He says a tam does pay a half a kofer.
No,
he says the same way as a mu'ad pays, same way as a mu'ad pays nezek sholem and a tam pays chatzi nezek. He says the same thing as kofer. If the mu'ad killed a person and the owner is paying nezek sholem, and if the mu'ad killed and if the tam killed a person, he's paying half the kofer. So there's no actual difference between them. Once the Mishnah already said that one's paying half and the other one's paying full, then that includes also the matter of kofer. The point being, in other words, that the Mefarshim explain, since after all, the Mishnah seems to be trying to list all the differences between Tam and Mu'ad, Ma ben Tam l'Mu'ad, we shouldn't assume without valid justification that it's just leaving it, that it only mentioned a partial list and is leaving out some. So it's better, even though we would rather say that a Mishnah goes according to all Tanoim, on the other hand, we would rather say that this Mishnah goes only according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, and at least be able to say it's a full list rather than the Shittim Kubetzis brings us from the Raivad, that yeah, we'd rather say that the Mishnah is not leaving out anything, even if that forces us to make it like one Tana, because after all, it sounds like the Mishnah is trying to give us a full list rather than have to say Tana v'Shayer and say that it would go according to everybody. So therefore, so that's not a proof. Rav Huna Brei de Reshua would say that, yeah, nevertheless, that's how we have to say it. The Mishnah is apparently leaving out some things, but on the other hand, we don't have to say that. We could say the Mishnah is not leaving out anything. So we could understand the Mishnah according to either a Papa or a Huna Brei de Reshua. We could understand it like a Papa, that it's not leaving out anything. And we could learn according to the Huna Brei de Reshua that it's leaving out two things, one of them being the matter, but both of them having to do what one of them having to do with Knas versus Mammon, and the other one about Koifer or lack thereof.
Koifer or not
paying Koifer.
Okay. Even though Koifer, you said we're paying by Koifer by both of them.
No, so that's the thing. According to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, yes. According to the Chachamim, no.
Oh,
so according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, the Mishnah could have mentioned the point that, rather, according to the Chachamim, rather, we would say the Mishnah left out the point that you're not paying kofar in the case of a tam. So according to the point of Rabbi Yeshua, you would say the Mishnah is leaving out two things, that and the fact that you don't pay for a tam or piatzma because it's a knas. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof. We learn actually in a Mishnah in Ksubas, also about this topic of Moedib Knas. If a person comes to Beis Din and says, Hey, Miss Shodius Pliny, he says, My Shur killed somebody, Oi Shodish Pliny, or My Shur killed somebody's Shur, Hares Mashalam Apiatzma, he does pay Apiatzma because that's Mammon, not Knas. My Lab Vatam. Shouldn't we assume that Mishnah means even by a Tam? So then in that case, then that would prove against the Rav Huna Brei de Reshua, who says that it's a knas. And the answer is, loy b'mu'ad. No, because we could say it's talking about a mu'ad. Well, the question is, aval tam mai, so what would be if it was a tam? Hochi nami de'in mishalom api'atzmai. Are you going to tell me that indeed by a tam, he's not paying based on his own admission, only if Edim come? Well, in that case, if you're going to say so, our tam my hokinami in mishalom apiatzmoi. So you're going to say that what by a tam we're going to say he doesn't pay on his own because it's a koifer, because it's a knas. Ihochi, then if so, adatoni sefer, then continue. When the Mishnah goes on to, and by the way, the Shittim Kubetzis brings from somebody called Talmidu Rabbi Yisrael, the Mishnah can't be talking about Shein Veregel, because then it's Poshut, of course. A person comes to Beis Din and says, my animal committed Shein Veregel, then of course he's going to be Chayav no Chiddush. So therefore, we have to be talking about that, we have to be talking about as far as Keren. And in that case, is the Mishnah distinguishing between Tam and Mord? Rav Huna Ber de Yeshua would argue the Mishnah has to be distinguishing between Tam and Mord because according to him, a Tam is Knas, and you don't pay Knas up Yatzma. Well, then, in that case, the Gemara says, Ihochi, Adatoni Sefer. Well, in that case, instead of teaching in the Sefer where it continues, Hamas Shodius Abdish Oplaini, on the other hand, the Sefer of that Mishnah in Ksubas continues. If the person says, my shur killed somebody's Eved, Ein Mashalom Apiatzmai, he doesn't pay based on his own admission because that's a Knas. The 30 Shkolim that he pays for an Eved is definitely a Knas. Everybody agrees to that. So you should argue liftlig velisnibidi day. The mission instead of bringing in the case of killing an eved, the Mishnah could have drawn a distinction within where he says that my shur killed a person or killed the other person's shur. It could have made a distinction between that. When would we say that he's chayav to pay based on his own admission? Only if the animal was a mord. So why wouldn't the Mishnah mention that distinction? So doesn't that prove, therefore, that the Mishnah is indeed talking about both tam and mord, and therefore that would show that the payment by a tam is mamon, like Rav Papa says, and not knas, like Rav Huna Ber de Yeshua says? And the answer is the Gemara says, no, kula b'mord kamayri. You could say the entire Mishnah is talking about a mord. Within a mord, the Mishnah wants to point out there are distinctions. Because even with a mord, fine, the payment for killing another animal is definitely mamon. The paying the koifer also we can talk about as mamon, but the paying for the eved would definitely be a knas. So the Mishnah only wants to point out the distinction within that. Even with a mord, certain payments are going to be only a knas, namely the one for an eved.
Well, it depends if it's
No, the 30 shloim for an eved is a fixed value. It doesn't depend on the value of the eved. So whether the eved was worth a little or a lot, either way, it's a fixed 30 shloim. That's an example of a knas. So the Mishnah is just trying to show that distinction. It's not trying to draw a distinction between tam and mord. That's not. It's true. There is such a distinction, but the Mishnah is not getting into that distinction.
The koifer would also be.
So Rashi says then that if we assume that the animal is a tam and he's paying chatzi koifer, that would Rabbi Yosef really would say that he has to pay chatzi koifer. We just said before Rabbi Yosef really says that. So we would say fine. The Mishnah is saying that he's paying when he says Hamas Shodius Pliny. If we assume that the Mishnah is talking about a tam as well, then we say he's paying apiatme. What is he paying? He's paying chatzi koifer. That would be like Rabbi Yosef really. Now that we're saying in the end, according to Huna Ber de Yeshua, that the Mishnah is only talking only about a mord, then there's koifer shalom. He's paying a complete koifer. Both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yisrael Gvili are going to agree to that. It says in a pasuk, and yeah, that he's paying up yatzmai, because that's not a knas. Okay. The Gemara continues. Zat Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof. A braisa says zehaklal. This is the general rule. Kol mashalom yoser amasha hizik. Anytime a person pays more than the amount that he damaged, ein mashalom apiatzmai, then he doesn't pay based on his own admission because that would be a knas. So my lav hapachas mimasha hizik mashalom. Doesn't that imply that if he pays less than what he damaged, then he would pay apiatzmai because that wouldn't be a knas? Well, in that case, that would prove Rav Papa's point that chatzin nezik is a knas. Is mamon because chatzin nezik is paying less than what he's damaged, so therefore that would be considered mamon. And the answer is loy. No, you could say the Mishnah means ha kamasha hezek mishalim. Only if he pays the exact amount of what he caused the damage, then he would pay up the atzmet because that would be considered mamon. So the Gemara says, "Avol pochus my hachinami de lemeshalim." So what you're telling me then, if he's paying less than the damage, he doesn't pay up the atzmai, because it's considered a knas. Well, then listen, zehaklal. Then why doesn't the Braisa say kol she'ena meshalim kemasha hizik? Then why taka doesn't the Mishnah say anybody who doesn't pay according to the amount he damaged? The mashma pochus and mashma yosef. That would imply that whether it's more or whether it's less, it's considered a knas. The fact that the Mishnah said, the fact that the Braisa says only that he doesn't, that when he's paying more is considered a knas, implying that when he's paying less is not a knas but rather than mamon, that would prove like Rav Papa, not like Rav Huna Ben Yehoshua. So the Gemara says Tiyupta. So that's a contradiction. The Hilchasa, however, the Halacha is Pauganiska Knasa. The Halacha, nevertheless, is like Rav Huna Ben Yehoshua, that the Chatzi Nezek is considered a knas. The Gemara says Tiyupta, the Hilchasa. What do you mean? You just refuted him from this Braisa. How can you say the Halacha is like him? And the answer is, hey, yes, because you know what? What was your problem? How did we slog up Rav Huna Ben Yehoshua from the Braisa? Time of my habit, Yota. On what basis did we say that we slogged him up? Mishum de katoni kimoisha hizik, because the Braisa had not used the expression kimoisha hizik, and we said, doesn't that imply that when he's paying less, then it's still considered mammon? No, the reason why the Braisa didn't use that expression, loy psikole, because the Braisa could not have said that as a blanket statement. Because we have what we learned earlier in the perek, and we're going to learn in more detail at the beginning of the next perek about chatzin nezek tsroiris. Now we know if an animal steps on something and breaks it, then you pay nezek sholim. If the animal kicks it, then it depends whether it was b'derech hilucha, whether it was in the normal way that it's walking or not. But you have a case that we touched on before where the animal is walking down the street, little pebbles come flying out from under its feet, and they fly into another area and damage Caleb. There we say you're paying only chatzin nezek, you're only paying half of the nezek. Now that, the hilchsa gmirila, we have a halacha l'moshe misinai, that he pays chatzin nezek for that, d'mamoinahu, and that is considered mamon, mishum hochi le'katani. Therefore the braisa could not use the expression, whenever you're paying equal to what you damage is considered mamon, implying that if not, it's considered nezek, because the fact is, there you have a singular example where you're paying less than the value of the damage, and it's still considered mammon. So therefore, the braisa ends up not being a contradiction against the Rav Huna Ben Yehoshua. So therefore, the halacha can well be like him, that the chatzin nezek is considered a knas and not mammon. Okay, well. So now that we've established that the halacha is like Rav Huna Ben Yehoshua, and says that, and then we say that chatzin nezek is considered a knas, then we have to consider. We have a general rule that we've said so far, any time that an animal causes unusual damage is considered a tolda of keren. So now let's go through some examples and see what's considered unusual, which therefore would be keren, and we have to distinguish between tam and mord versus when it would be considered shein, and therefore it's considered mamon, and he's paying the whole thing, and he's paying even if there's not a based in smuchin, and even al piatzmai. So the difference is with Shane, there's no difference between tam and mord. Shane is definitely mammon. If your animal goes and eats somebody else's fruit or grazes in his field or whatever, then you're definitely chayiv nezek shalim. And no question about that. And that would be even if there's not a beis din smuchin to enforce it, even if you come into beis din and admit it on your own, you're paying up the atzma. On the other hand, then you have keren, where you have the distinction between tam and mord. When the animal is a tam, the first few times, then we're saying that you're only paying chatzin nezek, and we just established the halachas like Rav Huna Ben Yehoshua that it's considered a knas. So therefore, you're not paying up yatzma if you go and voluntarily admit it in beis din. Only a beis din of smuchin is empowered to judge such cases. So now we have to distinguish what's mammon and what's knas when it comes to an animal eating. So hi kalba de ochel imri. If a dog goes and eats sheep, v'shuna de ochel tanagola, or if a cat eats up a chicken, mishunahu, that is considered something unusual. It's not usual for a dog or a cat to do that. Therefore, even though the animal is getting hana from the eating, it's still considered keren. Because again, keren is considered is when there's an unusual kind of hezek.
You know, we say keren is an accident. known to do
that. So that's a no, according to the Hunabid of Shur Fakir, we're saying an ox is not known to do that. We're saying until the third time, until he's been warned repeatedly that the ox in front of Beis Din, that the ox is dangerous and he still didn't guard it. No, we say up until that point it's not prone to goring. So by the same token, a dog is not prone to eating sheep and a cat is not prone to eating chickens.
Is that the fact?
Or... Well, let's see. The Gemara is gonna discuss. So Veloy Magdin and Babavel, therefore. The halacha would be that we cannot collect such damages in Bavel. Because in Bavel, they don't have smuchim. Smicha of the original type can be given only in Eretz Yisrael. Mefarshim discuss over here that the Rosh points out that there may be a difference. Are we talking about the dog killed the animal and then ate it? Or are we talking about that? A dog certainly will eat a dead body, but the fact that it kills it first, that's the unusual thing. However, the Gemara says Vahani Mila B'Ravrivi, that would only be if it was a large sheep or a large chicken, Avo B'Zutri or Chahu. But if it's a small one, then it's normal. Cats will eat small chickens, and dogs will eat small sheep. So that's considered normal, and therefore that would be Shein and Yischayv Nezek Shalom. The Gemara continues, V'eat tofas. Now, if the Nizek, even in Bavel, if he grabs a hold of property that belongs to the Nizek, Loi Mapkin and Mine, we don't take it away from him. It is true that a Beis Din in Chutz Laaretz cannot collect, or nowadays any Beis Din, even in Eretz Yisrael, cannot collect knossos, but if he grabs it, then we don't take it away from him because now he's muchzik in it. Right. Well, no, you can't really grab karka, but Tosfos, Tosfos brings over here, and Rabbeinu Tam mentions over here in Tosfos, and says that no, when we say tofas, we means he grabs the actual mazik itself. So for example, so the dog went and killed and ate one of his sheep. And we're talking about it's a large sheep, so we're saying it's keren. If the nizik now grabs a hold of that dog and says, I'm not returning this dog unless you pay me its value, otherwise I'm going to keep the dog and sell it to pay for the nizik, then we would allow him to keep it. But Rabbeinu Tam learns that if it's something else that he took, then we wouldn't allow that. Many other Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Tam on that and say that no, tofas can mean that he has a hold of any property of the mazik. Anyway, continues the Gemara. The Ioma Kivuli Zimna does Lina La'arad Yisrael. If the Mazik says, you know what, if the Nizik rather says, set me, he says to the local Beis Din in Bavel, I know you Beis Din in Bavel cannot deal with Dine Knossos, but set me up a time that I should be able to go to and give out a summons to the Mazik that we should go to the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, where there they have Smuchin, Kabin and Lay, then Beis Din will do that. And if not, then they will put the mazik in chedim if he doesn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael for that purpose. Given that, because dinik nosis, because the nizik is arguing, I should be entitled to that chatzin nizik. The only reason why you're not paying it is because we're in Babel. Well, very well. Let's go to Eretz Yisrael and let them judge it over there and be mechayim over there. What?
We live here,
but therefore the Mazik does not have the right to say, sorry, I'm not going to Eretz Yisrael for that. The local Beis Din will tell him you have to go, otherwise we're putting you in Cheder. In fact, the Gemara continues, whether the Nizek says that we should go to Eretz Yisrael or not, either way, we tell him that he has to get rid of this dangerous animal, of this dangerous dog or cat, Misham Tinanlay Adamasala Kazeta. Either way, actually, we're going to be putting him in Cheder until he gets rid of the Hezek. Midir Abnosin, based on what Abnosin says, the Tanya Abnosin Omer Minayin Shaloyigadol Adam Kelav Rabaseich Beisay. How do we know that a person is not allowed to raise a dangerous dog in his household? Val Yamid Sulam Ra'ua Baseich Beisay, or leave a rickety ladder where somebody might climb up and fall down in his house. Tamadloimeloy Sosim Damim Beisecha. The pasuk says, "Don't let there be blood in your house," where therefore a dangerous dog or a dangerous ladder could lead to bloodshed. So therefore, because he's not being careful, that's now that he knows that his animal is dangerous, he has a responsibility to get rid of it. And if he doesn't, then we put him in cheirim and we tell him he has to get rid of the animal. The Rosh actually makes an interesting point. He says, in that case, how does an ox ever become mu'ad? The first time an ox kills, then we should tell them you have to get rid of the ox. And he answers, the difference is, when you're talking about oxen, you're talking about animals of approximately equal size. So it's normal, it's within reason, it's normal for them to fight. You can't say that just because it killed one animal once, that therefore right away you should have to get rid of it. On the other hand, with a dog and large sheep or a cat and large chickens, they're not even the same size. They're not the same size, they're not the same species. It's not normal for them to fight. And therefore, if it does, then therefore we have more of a reason to require him. We're saying your animal is unusually dangerous and you have to get rid of it. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.